Okay, this week is Parashas Nosai. Nosai. Okay, Nosai is the biggest parish in the Torah. Nosai has 176 psukim. 176. It's part of a trial. There are another two things which have that number: Tehillim, Mizmar Kuf Yotes, and Masechta Bava Basra. Okay, so this is a 176 psukim, and we're all aware why is this the parasha which has the most psukim. It's after Matan Torah, after we experience Matan Torah, there's a ribui, there's a surge to increase in the study of Torah and the knowledge of Torah, and it comes out in this fashion. Okay, so let's begin with an idea. Let's begin with following idea. We'll go to the middle of the parasha. There are three mitzvahs in the parasha that are back to back. After we learn about, that we finish off with the Levim Shevet Levi, and when we finished discussing what Shevet Levi, their obligations are to carry what they're supposed to carry in the Midbar, what each of the various families are supposed to do. Then we go into a few mitzvahs. Okay, there's one mitzvah, we first described the halacha of a mitzvah. A mitzvah who is a mitzvah has to be said on chus to sholesh machanais. And then we come to what's called gezel hager. Okay, Gezel Hager, it's not only Gezel Hager, it's the halacha of Gezel. When we read the word Sukkim, Ba'idabra Hashem, Ma'shalem, Da'abir, El B'nei Yisrael, Ish or Yisha, Ki Yasu Mikol Chatois Ha'adam Limol Mal Ba'Hashem, the Oshma HaNefesh Ahi. And what this means simply is a person is guilty for Gezel. A person steals from his friend, and he is questioned, he is a suspect, and he is apprehended, or he is questioned. And they ask him, did you steal money from your friend? And he responds, absolutely not. I'm a tzaddik. I don't owe anyone any money. And they say to him, swear. And he takes an oath. The kichesh ba'amisoi. He denies owing money to his fellow man. And he denies it not just with words, he denies it with a shavua. And then what happens? He has remorse. The hisvadu eschat hasam, he comes around, he recognizes that he's done a terrible avir, and he confesses that he's a liar. Indeed, he owes the money, he swore falsely. And the pasuk goes on to say that you have to pay back the money that you have stolen, and you have to not only pay back what you have stolen, you have to give an additional fifth. Okay? That's the mitzvah. And then the pasuk goes on to talk about truma, which is really an extension of this parasha. There's no parasha break, so let's just leave it with that the element. That's the main thrust of a person who sins by stealing money from his fellow men, and he is in denial and he swears falsely. The next mitzvah, the next major parasha, the next chunk is the sugya of a soita, a woman who is unfaithful to her husband. We all know the story. Husband takes her to the Beis HaMikdash. She suspects her, gives her to drink the main soita. If she's a liar, then her stomach will explode and she instantly dies. If she is innocent, then she will be blessed and will have children. And then we come to the next mitzvah. The next mitzvah is a nazir, a person who decides to do something extra, to abstain from the delicacies of this world, from yayin, and from contaminating to the dead, cutting his hair, and we learn the entire parasha of what exactly he's supposed to do. So there are pretty much three mitzvahs back to back. However, there's a very big difference between these three mitzvahs. The difference is mimizrach lemayrev, and that is how the Torah describes the nature of the situation. When it comes to Gezel Hager, when Reuven steals money from Shimon and denies that he, and then is suspected of being a ganef and denies owing money and swears falsely to that effect. So let me ask you the question. To whom has this man sinned against? Obviously, every sin the person does is both against Hashem and against his fellow man. If I steal from someone, I have caused you harm, my fellow man harm, but also the Torah has taught me not to do this. So, in effect, I'm also rebelling against the Ribbono Shel Olam. Yet, even though it's clear as day, when a person steals, does harm to his fellow man, it's a double avera, ben adam la'amakim ben'am l'chaveroi, the only way the Torah defines the avera is a transgression against Hashem. Dabrel b'nei Yisrael ish o yisha ki yasu mikol chatois ha'adam limol ma'al to commit a transgression b'Hashem. You are rebellious against Hashem, the Oshema ha'nefesh ha'hi, that neshama is guilty. And the psukim go on, what sin are we describing? You would think, who knows what you did? And the psukim go on to describe exactly what you did. The hisvadu, you should confess. The heishives ha'shamoi b'roishoi, you have to pay back the money that you owe, plus v'chamishi so you're safe for love, give more money. The nosan la'asher oshamloi. And he doesn't even make mention about the carbon. You also have to bring, and then it goes on to say, bring more carbon, miel akipurim, because you swore falsely. What's going on over here? You would think that if Reuven steals $1 million from Shimon, who have you primarily harmed? Your friend. It also happens to be that when you sin against your friend, when you cause your friend harm, you're also sinning against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Pasuk should mention both. And if you only want to go mention one of the two elements of sin, you would think you would mention, Iker should be mentioning that you've sinned against, you've caused harm to your friend. No. The Torah defines the sin of geneva or gezela and causing harm to your friend, the kichesh ba'amisoi, with the term mo'ala mo'ala mal ba'hashem. Okay, next section, next parasha. Soita. A woman is unfaithful, infidelity. To whom has she sinned? She commits adultery. Who has she sinned? Her husband doesn't even know. Let's say her husband doesn't even know. So, I mean, her husband doesn't. Primarily, she sinned against Hashem. Right? I mean, she sinned. Adultery is a terrible avera. She also she's been unfaithful to her husband. So, they're both of them are there. If you would ask the average person, whom is the primary victim in this crime? The Ribbono Shel Olam or her husband? I don't know what you would say. Maybe it all depends obviously on the situation. But you have to acknowledge that when a woman commits adultery, it's not like stealing money. When you steal money from someone else, that person that you stole, the victim, has a big hole in their bank account. When a woman is unfaithful to her husband, she didn't take anything away from the husband. The husband is the same husband. It's just that she, secretly or not secretly, is fooling around. So, okay, in a chanami. But think about it. It's not exactly the same thing as stealing from another human being. When you steal money from a human being, you've physically taken away someone else's property. Acknowledge? When a woman is unfaithful, you've damaged trust. V'chulu v'chulu. But is there any damage in terms of dollars and cents? No.
It's a spiritual.
No. So in that element, that really is a something which is more on the spiritual side than on the physical side. So if you only have a choice of it's definitely a double avera, ben adam lachavera, ben adam lamakayim, if you want to express the sin, you only have a choice one or the other, you would say you've sinned against Hashem. Yet, in the entire very long section of Saita, nowhere does it say that this woman has sinned against Hashem. It's like Hashem doesn't exist. But Dabir b'nei Yisrael v'yomar ish ish ki siste ishtoy. A woman goes astray. Umo'ala vo mo'al. She commits a transgression against him. The way the Torah defines the chait of adultery is purely she has rebelled, she has committed a crime against her husband. Don't tell me the Torah doesn't have vocabulary to describe sinning against Hashem, because just a few psukim before, when it spoke about stealing money, it says, who did you sin against? Umola mahal ba'Hashem. I steal your money, umola mahal ba'Hashem. A woman's unfaithful, umola vo ma. I've sinned against my husband. Now, we go to the third section. The third section, the parasha of Nazir. Nazir, Chazal says, is a sinner. He decides he's going to deny himself the good that this world has to offer. Hashem gave you blessing. Hashem gave you good wine. Hashem gave you beautiful hair. Okay, people pay billions, a billion-dollar industry to have nice hair, to style your hair. What does Chazal say? A Nazir is a sinner. And the proof is that when he concludes his term of Nazirus, he brings a Karban Chatos. You only bring a Karban Chatos if you do an Avera. What Avera did he do? The answer is he denied himself the pleasures of this world. Hashem put a person in this world in order to derive benefit from this world. By a person denying himself that benefit, he's doing an Avera. Now this particular person has good reason to deny himself the good pleasure of this world, because he has to train himself, because he is in a situation where his Yetzer Hara has gotten the better of him, and he needs a bit of discipline. So he has to take time out and abstain from the good of this world in order to properly train himself how to deal with the pleasures of this world in a responsible way. So in the meantime, he needs 30 days to take a time out. Time out, I'm going to be different. I'm going to be a fundamentalist. A Nazi really is an extremist. Okay, it's not a good thing. No, in Chazal, they very much look down on anything that a person does in the extreme. What are you, an extremist? If the whole world goes to a funeral, so you go to the funeral. Go to the cemetery. Why are you different? The whole world contaminates to the dead. Well, you're so special. Who do you think you are? No. I don't go near dead bodies. I don't come near contamination. Have a drink of wine. L'chaim. Let's go. Chol HaMoed trip. Let's go to Disneyland. No. I'm going to sit in Kollel. I'm going to sit and learn. Who do you think you are? What are you, a Malach Elokim? Are you going to grow long here? You're going to look funny? I'm sanctifying my hair, the hair, all the Kabbalistic. What do you think you are? A Nazir is an extremist. He's a fundamentalist. A Nazir is a very dangerous person. We all know, you see people that people who are fundamentalists, they are very dangerous. That's really what a Nazir is. Torah says, I don't like this. This is not there. There are times in life, for short periods of life, for 30 days, the whole term is 30 days. You want it a little bit longer, so maybe it depends on the situation.
Nazir
Shimshon, that's an exceptional case. That's an exceptional. Nazir Olam, a Nazir Shimshon, those are rare exceptions. But generally, what is Nazirus? Nazirus is a 30-day term. Yiyeh b'gematria, 30, period. And you want to mean, there are different rules, but that's what a Nazirus is. The Torah does not like extremism. You want to be an extremist, it may indeed be necessary and it's sanctioned, but just to achieve a certain goal. But that's it. 30 days. Cut out the nonsense. And you should know that being an extremist for 30 days is an Avera. Maybe we'll sanction the Avera, we'll tolerate it for 30 days, but not more than that. And because you did an Avera, you have to bring a Karban Chatos when it's all over. Now, when this person has committed a crime by being a fundamentalist for 30 days, to whom did he commit the crime? Did he commit the crime? I'm a fundamentalist. I'm an extremist. It's not pleasant dealing with extremists. It's not.
People. Not a Kanoi.
What?
He's not a Kanoi.
Kanoi? It is a Kiza Kanoi. That's what he is, a Kanoi. I'm not going to go and not touch the dead. I'm going to grow long hair. I'm not going to derive pleasure from this world. He's different. you're acting strange. When you're acting strange, who are you sinning against? Well, I'm sinning against Hashem, right? Because Hashem doesn't want this. I have to bring a carbon chatos. I'm sinning against my fellow man. I'm not participating. I'm not part of society. Yet the way the Torah defines the sin, this incredible idea, not my idea, Rashi says this, is he has sinned against himself. He committed a crime against himself. Not against Hashem, not against his fellow man, against himself. How do I know that? Because at the very end of the Nazirus, V'zois toiras ha-nazir b'yoy milois yimei nizrei. Ah, you made it. Day 30 has arrived. You didn't eat any grapes. You didn't drink any wine. You didn't contaminate to the dead. You didn't get a haircut for 30 days. Congratulations. Now, no more extremism. Let's come back, enter back into society as a normal person. But you did an aveira. You did an aveira because you're an extremist for 30 days. You need a kapara. Yavi oi soi. Rashi. What's the word yavi oi soi? Pasuk Yud Gimel. Yavi es atzmoi. Bring yourself. Okay, the Sipurno notes. Every time you have in the Torah a person coming to the Beis HaMikdash, someone is always bringing him. Who brings the Soita? The husband brings the Soita. Who brings the Kohen? Who brings a Mitzoyra? V'huva el HaKohen. There's someone taking the Mitzoyra, schlepping him to the Kohen to be examined. The Nirtza. Who brings the Nirtza? The master. If the slave says, I love you, my master, I'm not leaving here. So it says the master takes you by the hand and he brings you to the Bezdin. Whenever you have to come, you're in trouble, you're taken to the principal's office, you're always being taken by someone else. The only time a person is being taken to the principal's office for a crime who brings himself is the Nazir. Yavi oisai. Bring yourself. Why bring yourself? Because normally, the one who brings you is the one to whom the victim brings you. Isn't that the way Bezdin works? In Bezdin, the victim brings the perpetrator to court. Okay, so a Mitzoyra society says this guy's a danger. He has Saras. He's a danger to society. So we have to quarantine him. Society is the victim. We got to get rid of this guy. The master is the victim. This guy doesn't want to leave the house. This guy, a slave, I'm good to me, doesn't want to leave the house. Doesn't want to leave. The master is the victim. What? Yeah. The victim brings you. The husband is certainly the victim of the wife who's been unfaithful. So why are you bringing yourself? Why are you bringing yourself to Fakapara? You know why? Because you're the victim. You've committed a crime against yourself. So you're the victim. So bring yourself. Okay, the right hand brings the left hand. So isn't that amazing? We have here three mitzvahs in this parasha juxtaposed. The mitzvah of Gezel. The kichesh ba'amisa. You steal money. I didn't do anything. Who did you sin against? You've sinned against Hashem. Umola umoala moal bahashem. Next mitzvah. Unfaithful wife. Infidelity. Who did she sin against? Umola bo moal. She sinned against her husband, against her husband. And then when it comes to the third mitzvah in the Torah, vehevi es vehevi oso. What again? V'zois yavi oisoi, Rashi, yavi es atzmo. You've sinned against yourself. The Torah here is laying out the full spectrum. The full Torah is being yoyreid l'soif daitoi shel adam. It's providing insight into the human condition to understand, to define crime. And also to define relationships. Every person has different types of relationships. And it's telling you something very, very fascinating, which you really wouldn't think to be correct. When a person steals money from another fellow man, the primary crime is against Hashem. It's really a rebellion. Oh, but I've caused my friend harm. That's right. You've definitely caused your friend harm. But the root the root of your transgression is I do not believe in Hashem. If I really believed in Hashem, then I would understand that I'm not entitled to this money. It's his money. It's his hard-earned money. It's not my money. It just so happens as a collateral damage of my deficiency of who I am, I've caused another fellow man very great harm. I've ripped him off. But the root of taking someone's money is you don't believe in Hashem. You don't believe that Hashem is watching. Hashem knows. Hashem gives you what you deserve, what he deserves, and it's not what you do. It's a revelation. When a woman is unfaithful to her husband, the Torah is revealing to us, it's not about Hashem. It's an incredible thing. It's not about the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's the Torah demands in a relationship, in a marriage, it's defining marriage, loyalty. And the primary sin in being unfaithful, it's not Loitinah. It's incredible. You read the Aseret HaDibros, Loitinah. Hashem is telling you, don't commit adultery. No, and now a man commits adultery. Yeah, I'm not in violation of what it says in the Torah. And you are in violation, obviously. But the Torah here is being Yoreid, L'soiv Daitai Shel Adam. The primary crime is you've not been loyal to your spouse. There's a relationship, and you violated that trust. And when it comes to a nazir, the Torah is telling you, why are you an extremist? Why have you gone to such an extreme? What's wrong with you? There's something wrong with who you are. You do not appreciate your capabilities, your abilities, your talents, and the fact that you have to resort to such extremism to become a nazir, to do things which are not normal. The most important thing in life is to be normal. To be le'olam yiver le'atzmai derech mimutza, the middle road. Oh, I don't go to funerals. I don't go to the cemetery. I don't eat everything. Nothing's kosher enough for me. I'm a monk. Are you normal? Are you a normal person? Well, what are you doing crazy things? It's a sin. The Torah clearly says you need a kapara. Who did you sin against? You sinned against yourself. You don't have trust. You don't appreciate who you are, what you're capable of, the way what you owe yourself. And therefore, the Torah defines it in Yavi es Atzmai. So it's all I really want to say is you see here in this parasha, the Torah here is coming to define for us three different relationships. There's a relationship man has with Hashem, man has with his fellow man, and a relationship a person has with himself. And sometimes the only way you can fully understand these relationships is always when you go to the opposite extreme. The benchmark is always the opposite. And really, the Hakdama to that is what it's this expires from all places. It talks about the Mitzoyra has to be sent outside Chutz Mishaloish Machanais. And Rashi says, when did this mitzvah take place? On the day of the Hakomas HaMishkan. Eight parshiyos were taught on the day of when they erected the Mishkan. And one of them was that if a person is a tzaras, he has to leave Yerushalayim. Really, from all of the Taryag mitzvahs, it was really necessary that this should be so important to be taught on the day of the Hakomas HaMishkan? And the answer is yes, because the Hakomas HaMishkan is coming to define sanctity. And the only way you can define one extreme is by defining the counterbalance, the opposite extreme. When you appreciate that a Mitzoyra cannot be in the Gimel Machanois, Chutz Mi Gimel Machanois, then you can appreciate what is the sanctity of this Makom itself. It's specifically because the Mishkan now has been established. We have now established the most sacred location on earth. So now the only way we can define this is to have a benchmark. And the benchmark is the counterbalance, is the extreme opposite. When you understand that the Mitzorah has to be sent out Chus Misholosh Machnas, now you can get an appreciation of what the sanctity of this place is. Likewise, the Torah here is that you want to define who you are, the relationship that you have with yourself. If you want to define the relationship a man has with his wife, but everything in Parashat Sotah, by the way, is two ways. Okay, the Torah, everything in Parashat is only all the Parashat only works if the man is tzaddik also. The man is unfaithful to his wife. Chazal say, part of the pasuk, the whole thing is batal mavutal. It's a two-way street, the Parashat Sotah. The Torah is defining the relationship a man has with his spouse. And then the Torah defines the relationship a man has with his fellow man. And the only way we can define what that relationship is by creating benchmarks. And the benchmarks are always in the form of the extreme opposite. When a person commits a crime, we're giving you the dogma of what it means, a rebellion against your spouse. We're giving you a dogma of what it means, a rebellion against Hashem, and we're giving you a dogma of what it means, a rebellion against yourself. And the benchmarks are in the chatoim. When you steal against your friend, guess what? The definition of rebelling against Hashem, if we want to understand what it means to be close to Hashem, we have to understand what it means being distant from Hashem. And the way we can appreciate what it means to be distant by Hashem is how you deal with your fellow man. It's an incredible thing, incredible insight of we want to define the closeness you can the way you can come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How? Let's see how you deal with your fellow man when it comes to property. It's Chazal. V'yohavta l're'acha kamoicha ze klal gadol b'Torah. When the ger came to Hillel, I want to convert. What did he say? He says, the whole Torah is v'yohavta l're'acha kamoicha. That's the whole Torah. What are you talking about? The Torah was given to us by Hashem. It is a tool to connect to the Ribbono Shel Olam. What are you talking about, your friend? Torah again does it over here. If you want to define your connection to Hashem, let's go to the opposite extreme, what it's called being distant from Hashem. Umo'ala bo'mo'al b'Hashem. How? You steal from someone. I don't care about the harm I cause someone else. This means that you are not connected to Hashem. Okay, like we always say in the Chazon Ish, the first rule in life is do no harm. Do no harm. I had a discussion yesterday with someone exactly about this. Someone was doing something, and I told him, how could you do this? You're causing grief to all of these people by doing this. And he gives me all of these reasons. And I said to him, those are the only reasons why I can give you another 20 reasons why you should do it. But after everything is said and done, when you step back and you look at it, it's wrong. You're causing grief. No. Torah here says, Umo'al, what is when you cause someone else grief by stealing from them? Umo'al bo'mo'al b'Hashem. A relationship between a man and a woman is defined in unloyalty. Not against Hashem. It's purely in that relationship and yourself as well. Being an extremist, acting meshuggah in ways that are not acceptable, you're harming yourself. You're not harming, society will just get rid of you. They'll just look the other way. You're doing great damage to your own neshama. Okay, let's go now to another example. Okay, another example we have in this week's parasha, we learned about the Nazir. When the Nazir's term is all over, what happens? It's something very bizarre. It says, V'achar yishte ha-Nazir yayin. He goes through the entire term of 30 days, and when the term is over, he brings his kurbanos. Oh, you want your kurbanos, you shaved off your hair, and now, okay, go back to your regular life. The achar yishte hanazir yayin. The nazir shall drink wine. Question: why does the Torah continue to call him a nazir when the term is over? What it should say is the achar yishteh yayin. The term is over. 30 days, you've done what you're supposed to do, you brought your korbanos, you shave off your hair, you're finished, you can now go back to contaminate to the dead, or you want to drink a cup of wine, because on the hate, the achar yishteh yayin, the Torah still continues to call him a nazir after it's all over. Why? Obviously, what is the lesson? The lesson is, once a nazir, you're always a nazir. The experience that you've gained being a nazir remains with you your whole life, even though halacha lemaisa, you don't practice, you look normal, you behave normal. But the experience, that holy experience of Kedusha, lingers on with you forever. Now, to expand upon this, I saw something very interesting in the Haftarah. This week is probably the most popular Haftarah in the entire Chamisha Chumshei Torah. How do I know that? Because in the Svarim that I used to prepare, all the Jewish Svarim, very rarely do they ever talk about the Haftarah. Very rarely do I find the Avar. The Haftarah is a nice Kishmak Avar also, the Parash and the Haftarah. But Parashas Nosoi, even though the Parash is jam-packed, you always find, oh, this week we have to talk about Manoach. We have to go talk about the story of Manoach and his wife and Shimshon, the birth of Shimshon Agibor. The whole story where the Malach comes and says, oh, you're an Akara, don't drink any product of the vine, and you shall abstain from the dead, the vine. You're going to have a child, he's going to be a Nazir. She tells this to Manoach. Manoach gets all excited. I want him to come back and tell us what to do. He's misfalal, he comes back. The Malach repeats himself. They have a child, and the child is Shimshon HaGibor, and he, Vayigdal Hanar, Vayivarachev Hashem, Vatochel Ruach Hashem, Lefamo, B'machan Eidan, Bein Tzadol, Bein Eshtool, and his, the spirit of Hashem came down to the earth through him, and he indeed was successful in leading Klal Yisrael against the Pelishtim. Now, the story, there are many, many, many diyukim, there's a lot of, I want to make one point, something which I came across, which I found in the Mefarshim, which I found very, very interesting. Why did Manoach demand that the Malach come back a second time? He already came, he already told them what to do. Why is Manoach coming back, praying that the Malach should come? So there's a very important diuk. It's not my vart. I saw this in a sefer which I do not remember the name of the sefer. It's not my vart. Vayetar Manoach el Hashem, vayoymar bi'adonoi, ish olokim, asher sholachta yovoy no oid eleinu, he's praised to Hashem, let him come again, v'yoreinu teach us manase lanar hayulod. The reason why Manoach wanted the Malach was to give instructions what to do with the child after he is born. The Malach only told the wife of Manoach what to do until he is born. Until he is born, you, the mother, should not drink wine. In other words, the mother should be a nazir. You, because if you drink wine, it's going to go into the fetus. So you do not drink wine. You do not kihincha hara. You'll be pregnant. The yoladet bein. He writes, so he does write a little. Let's step back now. The Atah Yishamri No Al Tish Diyayin. He told the wife, "You do not drink wine." The Sheikhar the Al Toichli Kol Tamei. You, the wife, should not eat product of the vine and should not eat anything that is contaminated, because you're going to give birth to a child. Kihincha hara v'yolad bein l'mora al lo yalar reisha. And this child, a razor, a moira, a third, a different interpretation of what that means. Al roisha ki nizil ki miyad na rabbi abaten fu yochel eshol miyad yishol miyad polishten. Okay, so now comes Manoach. There are two critical words, or five critical words. The yoreinu, his question was, I need the Malach to return to teach us manaseh lanar hayulot. What should we do regarding the child that will that you lud after the child is born? The Malach told us what to do until the child will be born, and told us what's going to happen, what the child should do after it's born. Now, reading a little bit in between the lines, but what he's trying to explain is, when the baby is born, can my wife, can she now drink wine? Can she now eat mad things that are contaminated? What should her behavior be after the baby is already born? We know, until the baby is born, it's a critical moment. It's a holy child in her womb. She should not eat anything that is tummy. She should not drink wine. But when the baby is born, the baby will be a nausea. And the baby will not drink wine. The baby will not cut its hair. V'chulu v'chulu. But what about my wife? Will she be permitted to once again drink wine? That's what I want to know. And the Malach comes back and the Malach says, indeed. Mikol, everything is words were. When the Malach comes, he says to her, indeed, Vayom Malach Hashem Amonech, Mikol Asher Amarti, El Ho'isha Tishomer. Everything that I told your wife to do, continue doing after the baby is born. Your question was, what should we do regarding Manasseh Lanar Hayulad? We are in Manasseh Lanar Hayulad. I told you what to do. What it means here is, what should we continue doing after the baby is born? And the Malach comes back and says, very good question. You're right, I forgot to tell you, just because the baby is born and now it's out of your body and it's no longer in the incubator anymore, and now it's safe. No, it's not safe. You, the mother, were a nazir, and you, the father, also were helping her in this matzav. Continue, stay on the course. Don't make any change. Oh, but it's not no gay anymore. It's not no gay. The baby already is born. The baby's in the cheder. He's in the dormitory. He's in yeshiva gedol. He's out of the house. He has a wife. The lila. So now we can go back and have some good wine and we can eat kosher delights. What's the problem over here? Problem is, no, that's not the way it works. When you have in life a religious experience, it doesn't go away. Just because the technical elements of the religious experience may be over, doesn't matter. It lingers. V'achar yishte hanazir yayin. You're no longer a nazir. You're done. You can contaminate it. You can drink wine. It doesn't matter. Once you're a nazir, the experience, the religious experience of being a nazir, it remains with you forever. That message is the primary message of the Haftarah. We have here a woman. A woman, she was drinking wine. She was eating things that are tamei. She was living a regular life. A Malach comes and says, woman, I got a mission for you. You're going to be the mother of the next Shoifet in Klali, so the next Gadol Hadar. You're going to be the mother of the next Gadol Hadar. Well, you think you're just going to have a baby? To be the mother of the next Gadol Hadar, you gotta lift yourself up to be on a very high level. No more of this food that's tummy. What's going on over here? Okay, it's the battery went dead. Yeah. Battery went dead. Thank you. No more of this non-kosher food, of this food that's tummy. No more yayin. Raise yourself to a higher level. And obviously with you, your husband has to be part of the program. You have to be raised to a new standard. The Malach, then Menoach, okay, we're going to do it. 9 months. For 9 months, I can handle it. I can handle it. We'll clean out the house. We'll be a new level. No internet for 9 months. But now, after the baby is born, I have a shaila. I want the Malach to come back and tell me, Ma, what should we do? What should we do when the baby is born? V'yoreinu, may he teach us manaseh, what should be done, lanar, regarding the nar hayulot. What do you mean the nar hayulot? I told you about the nar hayulot. I told you the nar will not moira loyal al roisha, it'll be nazir lakim. What don't you understand? I told you what to do for the next 9 months, and I told you the matzav of the child. What kind of question is this? The only explanation for this question is, what do we do after the baby is born? I know what we do for these 9 months. I know we're going to send the baby away from the crib to Koilel Chazonish. I know that. The question is, what about us? What do we do after the baby is born? Can we go back to drink wine? Can we go back and live our old life? And the Malach says that such a good question is kedai for me to come back to this world and let you know everything that I told you to do during these 9 months, continue doing lanar hayulad regarding the tekuf of your life after the nar is born. Because once you're a nazir, you're always a nazir. V'achar yishte ha-nazir yayin. The experience of bringing into this world a holy child and all that it entails, that experience never goes away. You may not be pregnant. You may not be carrying it in your womb. Doesn't matter. That experience must, that high must remain with you forever and ever. That is the primary message of this half time. Okay, let's go to another idea. This idea is a chiddush. I'm telling you a chiddush now, which I have no proof for, just a gut feeling. And I leave it to you. Either you're going to be a friend or foe. Either you're going to find support for what I'm saying, or you're going to prove me wrong. Halavai, either way. But I'm throwing out an idea, which I challenge you to help me figure out the emes. Today, Baruch Hashem, we have Kohanim. In the Beis HaMikdash, Bezmansha, Beis HaMikdash, HaYakayim, there are Kohanim who do Avodah. They do all the Avodah. Everything is all about. There are 20, in time of Chazal, there were 24 Mishmaros. Each Mishmar lived in their own city. The Kohanim HaKedoshim. Whole Yom Tov of Chanukah is all about Kohanim. And in reward for their hard service, we reward them, we give them matnas. There are 24 matnas kuruna. 24 different gifts they're given for payment for their service. Question: how do they earn theirs? How do they become Kohanim? How do they earn the right to serve Klal Yisrael in this capacity? Unfortunately, it's only because we, the regular Israelites, have made some horrible mistakes. Klal Yisrael either openly worshipped the Egel or was passively silent. We tolerated the Egel. And because of that, the right of every single family to devote, to dedicate his firstborn child to serve in Hashem's home was taken away from us. And instead was transferred to the Kohanim. The only reason why a Kohen has the right to serve in the Beis HaMikdash is because we did an Aveir, the Chero Egel. So there will only be the Evets. Every time a Kohen does Avod in the Beis HaMikdash, he's only serving because he's in exchange for a firstborn of a Yisrael who really should have done the Avodah. You know, Rav Zal, Shlomo Zalman Arbach, a tremendous Chiddush. He says the reason why the firstborns fast Erev Pesach. Why do the firstborns fast Erev Pesach? There are many reasons. He has a Chiddush only. He's the only one who says this. And it's not a Medrash. This is a 20th century Vart. Is because Erev Pesach, every single Kohen was in high demand. Because every single person in Klal Yisrael needs to bring a Korban Pesach. So every Kohen in the world is on duty. Is on duty in his big day kahuna, all ready to go. To do Shechita, Kabbalah, Hailacha, Zrika. Every person in Klal Yisrael comes to the Beis HaMikdash, every Bechor, every firstborn comes to the Beis HaMikdash, he sees what's going on, and he's filled with Agmas Nefesh. It should have been me. I should be the celebrity today. I'm a Bechor. The Avodah was meant for the firstborns. And look who's doing the Avodah today. The Kohanim. Every Kohen is on duty. I'm the Bechor. I should be doing the Avodah. Well, sorry, buddy. You blew it. There are consequences for doing averas. You do an avera, you suffer. You did an avera, that's it. You lose it. You're no longer going to be you're not going to serve in Hashem's house. Someone else will take your place. Tremendous agmas nefesh. And that agmas nefesh is the reason why every firstborn fasts. Because today, that is the day when they really are sensitive to what they have lost. And it's a very powerful Musar Haskel. Crime doesn't pay. You do an avera with all the tshuva, all the karbanos. The bottom line is the firstborns do not do avoda. The avoda was given to the kohanim. So every kohen is really b'di'evit. Now put that aside for one moment. Kohanim in this week's parsha we are taught have a very special mitzvah of birchas kohanim. Tuchening. Okay, they bless Klal Yisrael. Yivarecha Hashem v'yishmerecha Yer Hashem. They duchen. Why do kohanim duchen? Why are they the ones who are given the opportunity, the right to bless, to channel the blessing of Hashem to Klal Yisrael? So what will you say? And I saw this first in a lot of Svarim. They asked the question. And it goes, my inyan shmita eitzel har Sinai. Why the kohanim? Why them? Why is birchas kohanim give done by the gedolei Yisrael? There should be in every shul the rabbi. No, the rabbi. There's a rabbi. Every shul has a rabbi. So the rabbi of the shul on the Shalosh Regalim should get up by Musaf and should be the one that duchens. The rabbi should channel the blessing to the people. Why is he not gave it off? Huh? Why the kohanim? Let the duchening be done by the rabbanim. Or, I don't know, by someone else. So what is the answer? Well, the answer is, because it only makes sense because if the kohanim devote themselves yoimam v'layla to serve in Hashem's home and they're not busy making money, running around making money and being involved in gashmius, they are super sensitive to spiritual matters. They are the talmidei chacham. They are the dayan, they're the poskim. They are the religious. They're the clergy. So mamela, of course. Who else? So what would this mean? Let's continue along this line of reasoning. What would have been if the firstborns, if Klal Yisrael would have not have worshipped the Egel? So who would be doing the Avoid in the Beis HaMikdash? The firstborns. Who then would be doing Birchas Kohanim? What we call Birchas Kohanim, but who would be doing the what we'll call Birchas Kohanim? I would assume, based upon this line, of the firstborns.
No, but Aaron wrote the book.
What?
Aaron initiated.
So initiated, because of the hate. He was a kohen. He was serving in the Beis HaMikdash. If the only reason why kohanim are giving us the blessing is because they are doing the avoda, the natural conclusion is that if the hate or egel never happened, if the chet or egel never happened, and the avoda would have been done by the firstborns, then it would be the firstborns who would be giving the blessing of Yivarech Hashem v'yishmerecha Yoyer. Correct? Isn't that a logical conclusion? So I want to suggest to you, it's not the case. Birchas Kohanim is miyuchid la'aroin ulebanov, regardless of if they do the avoda or not. That means, even if we would not have worshipped the egel, and the avoda would have been done by the firstborns, the only ones who can do duchening, birchas kohanim, are Aaron Ubanov, a kohen miyuchas. Kohen miyuchas. They are the only ones who can do the avoda. And why do I want to say this? So let's look backwards. It's not a riot, but let's look backwards. It's a very strange bracha. The only time every bracha make a bracha to Hashem, Asher kiddushanu, the mitzvahs, Asher kiddushanu, b'kdushasoy, shel aroin, v'tzivanu, levarech es amo Yisrael be'ahava. So put us on Ava. What is this b'kdushasoy shel aharoin? Do you make a bracha when you bring a karban? You certainly do. The Rambam gives you the bracha. When you bring a carbon, when you bring a carbon chatas, do they make a bracha Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam Asher Kiddushanu. When the Kohen does the Avodah, only a Kohen can do the Avodah. Only a Kohen can do the Kabbalah, the Ha'ilacha, and the Zrigah. And L'cho'er, they make a bracha. That's the Pashtos, right? They make a bracha. You have a Kohen ready to do the Kabbalah. A Shechita can be done by a Zar. But let's say the Kabbalah. You have a Kohen lined up to do the Kabbalah, the Ha'ilacha, and the Zrigah. I'm all ready to go? Okay. All ready? Shechit. I'm ready. I got my basin. I'm ready to do Kabbalah. Oh, before we do it, let's take a bracha. Baruch Atah Hashem, okay, the Melech Haolam. What's the bracha? I don't believe, maybe I'm wrong, I don't believe the Kohen says, Baruch Atah Hashem, okay, the Melech Haolam, Asher Kiddushanu, Bikdushosoy Shel Aroin, Al Kabbalah Sadam, V'al Zrika Sadam, V'al Haolocha Sadam, whatever, Al Hakrav HaSoyla. I don't believe that's, I think in the Rambam actually says the bracha. The only time you say Bikdushosoy Shel Aharon is Duchening. Why? Because Duchening is Miyuchis L'Aharon regardless of who gets to do the Avodah. Even if the Avodah would have been done by a Bechor, you can't do Duchening. Aharon does the Duchening. You know why? Because Aharon is the one that has the Ahava. How do you know that? First of all, who's the one who composed Duchening? It wasn't the Ribbono Shel Olam. Parashas Shmini, when they inaugurated the Mishkan, Vayered when they brought the first Shmini, they came down from bringing the Korbanos. It says that Aaron came down and he blessed Klal Yisrael, and on the spur of the moment, when he came down from bringing the Miluim, the inaugural sacrifices on the eighth day of the Miluim, which was Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Aaron, on the spur of the moment, was inspired, and he had ahava for Klal Yisrael, and he blessed Klal Yisrael. Yivarechacha, Yoher Yisa, he composed it. On the spur of the moment, to his own love. And Hashem said, I like that, that was nice. I like that. Let's preserve that for Doiris. For Doiris. That's not a din in the one that does the Avodah. It's a din in Aaron. Birchas Koyhanim is pure. When it comes to Avodah, no. If you don't want to do the Avodah, Hashem will get someone else. Duchening. There's no someone else. This is the real deal. It's the real deal. Chutz Liaretz, Ashkenazim, we don't duchen. Why not? Big mystery. Big mystery. Why don't we duchen? It's not totally in the Eretz Yisrael. There's no duchen. Chutz Liaretz. The Chasam Sofer tried to renew it. The Gra tried to renew it. Sfaradim do it. Okay, we all know that Sfaradim do it. But Ashkenazim have never done it, and we don't have a really. Yeah, I tell you a whole bunch of reasons. Okay, you have to have yeshiva das. You have to have simcha. All number of reasons. But I just want add this element. Add this concept into the equation. Avoida uneshalma fodim sefosein. Davening, how can we give today Kohanim on Aliyah? We have Kohanim today. Kohen, Levi, Yisrael. Because even in Chutz Liaretz, we daven. Davening is in the place of bringing korbanos. Uneshalma fodim sefoseinu. So when we daven, we have to give Aliyahs. The aliyos that we give during davening is a chiluk of the nusach tefillah, part of the tefillah and other. So in avodah, even if it's not the real thing, it's okay, because the real thing really goes to the bukhar. There's no bukhar, so you give it, you go. Yeah, we have koyhanim, but duchening is the real deal. Duchening is aron ubana, just like it's real as who gives the bracha. It has to be real where the bracha comes from. There's authenticity in Birchas Kohanim that you don't have in every other element of our Avodah Hashem. Other elements of Avodah Hashem, unfortunately, it's been diluted, it has been transferred because of circumstances. But Duchening, Bikdushosoy Shel Aaron, where is the bracha? The real bracha is the Shefa of Bracha is in Eretz Yisrael, where we belong, not in Chutz Liaretz. It's diluted. Chutz Yaretz is a dilution of Kedusha Bracha. It's not the real deal. Birchos Kohanim does not tolerate dilution. It demands authenticity. The Iker Birchos Kohanim was done in the Beis Hamikdash in Yerushalayim. That's the real deal. That's where it was done. That's where it was the Shema Mefarish. Oh, we want to go do it now in Chutz Yaretz. In the Shal Mefanim Sifaseinu. Listen. When it comes to other things, you're right. You have to daven. Anyway, the avoid, even the basin wasn't that for real because it really belonged to the firstborns. It was taken away. It was given to the Kohanim. But Duchening was pure. Being that it demands authenticity and Chutz Li'aretz is lacking in that authenticity, we can add this theme to the equation, the idea to the equation of why we find that then Ashkenazim have not traditionally done. Okay, I think it's late. We'll stop over here. Have a wonderful, wonderful Shabbos.